Once upon a time, there was a land where everyone drove, everywhere, all the time, from as soon as they could walk until long after they could walk no longer. They drove. Cars, lorries, juggernauts, vans, scooters, bikes, or whatever. It wasn't just a part of everything that they did in that land, it was their whole lives. And yet, no one was any good at it. Those that drove juggernauts went where they shouldn't, cut corners, chewed the road up, and didn't give other road users enough room. They forgot their maps, they misused their sat-navs, and they phoned with one hand to ask others the way. Some drove to building sites, collecting and delivering and taking gangs to work, and they parked everywhere, wherever they could. And when all the other people went to work, which of course they all did in their vehicles, any that they had, they all went at the same time, each on their own, so the roads were packed and they all got delayed. Some jumped the lights, didn't stop at pedestrian crossings, refused to let buses out and drove too fast whenever they got the chance. To save time, they did their faces as they drove, they gulped the breakfast that they didn't have time for at home and drank their coffee, and they texted as they drove to say where they were and why they'd be late. When the children were taken to school, they all went in hatchbacks or vans or minibuses and drove through all the side roads near the school looking for parking spaces, phoning their friends to tell them how awful it all was. They almost blocked the roads, although they parked on the pavements, and in that land no one dreamed of walking if they could possibly help it, so all the children drove from the car to the school on scooters or bikes or skateboards or rollerblades. Shopping was always by car, of course, even if the shops were close by, and people went with pickups or vans or four-wheel drive off-roaders, sometimes with trailers and those with walking difficulties, which was quite a lot of them. They took mobility scooters to get them from the car parks to the shopping palace yards, and buggies to carry the shopping back in. And when people came home at the end of a day, they parked everything outside their houses or other people's houses, even the trucks and high-sided transporters, all much higher than people's windows. And they sat and watched the latest motoring videos from the mobile library. Those children whose PlayStations and computers had no joysticks or steering wheels played out with remote-controlled tanks and dolls' prams wherever they could find space among the parked cars and vans. That's how they lived in that land, and when they couldn't think of anything else to fill their time, they went out for a drive. But, as I say, and this is the point of the story, they all drove badly. They didn't pay attention, didn't use both hands, didn't look, didn't listen. They just did not care about anyone else at all. There were road traffic acts, good, sensible laws about driving, and a highway code too. But people broke the laws and ignored the code, so the codes and rules and regulations and laws didn't stop mistakes. Perhaps that wouldn't have mattered so much if they'd only harmed themselves by their bad driving, but other people were affected too. They were inconvenienced, slowed down and put upon. They were drowned in noise and choked in fumes and robbed of peace. They had hold-ups and breakdowns and snarl-ups and meltdowns. They had scrapes and shunts and bangs and big pile-ups. They had bruises and jerks and whips and breaks and worse. They all got hurt in every conceivable way, and some very much more than others, but nobody cared about their own mistakes. The accidents and problems were always somebody else's fault. What did they do about it in this land, besides complaining? Well, when the old laws and regulations and rules and codes were ignored, they made new ones, bigger, better and brighter rules, thousands of them. So many that advisers were employed to say which were important and which were not, and how they should be understood. There were police, motorised, of course. They caught some people, but they couldn't be everywhere all at once. And there were courts, drive-through courts, but there were lots of crafty lawyers who knew the quirky rules who could get people off. In the end, people in that land forgot what good driving was like. You did whatever you could get away with. Being wrong was getting nicked. But there was a sort of a rumour of another court, a great high court, with a main judge in charge, who was going to judge everyone by the old Road Traffic Acts and the Highway Code. But, well, that was a bit scary, so better not talk about it. Anyway, no one seemed to know where the court was or when it would call offenders. The only time that the judge got mentioned was when people demanded to know why he didn't come and sort things out. If he was real, how could he let all these accidents happen and all this damage? But then, one day, a young man called Jay appeared on the scene, who seemed to want to change things. He claimed to know the main judge of the Great High Court personally, and indeed to have been sent by him. It was said that Jay had been born in a garage, and he certainly seemed to know all about driving. Cars, lorries, vans, bikes, scooters, and all the rest. Not only did he know, he showed the right way to drive. He gave demonstrations in any kind of vehicle you had. He started a driving school. Such a good idea, everyone said. But at the same time, it was rather annoying because he would keep pointing out things that were wrong. How people drove, how the laws were used or not used, and how the police worked, and how the lawyers worked, and how the courts worked too. He said that if people didn't change their ways and adopt his way of driving, there would be trouble when the main judge of the Great High Court actually did come to sort everything out. To make the point crystal clear, he offered to take a driving test in public with everyone watching, and he would drive the way the main judge of the Great High Court would expect, the only completely safe way. And he did do just that, and he passed the test. No one could fault him on any subsection in all the Road Traffic Acts, and he more than satisfied every requirement of the Highway Code. But that annoyed everyone even more because it showed them all up terribly. And he was very outspoken about many of the new-fangled rules and regulations brought in by the advisers. He dismissed them as dangerous rubbish. People liked hearing about others' faults, but not their own. It especially annoyed the lawyers and the judges and the legal advisers and the police, and also the people in big cars and juggernauts and vans who liked things the way they were. Look, said the lawyers, if everything was clear about how to drive, we'd be out of a job, and they felt threatened. Look, said the judges, we decide what's right and what's wrong, and they were jealous. Look, said the advisers, this guy's making our regulations redundant, and they were offended. Look, said the police, we are doing the best we can, and they were resentful. Look, said all those who were doing all right for themselves, things are just fine, let's keep them that way, and they encouraged all the unrest. They got together and did all they could to stop his driving school and his demonstration drives, and tried to stop people even listening to him. Resentment grew, and when nothing else seemed to work, they arranged an accident for him. Jay was fatally injured, and they felt very pleased with what they had done to get rid of this nuisance. But that wasn't the end of the story, not by a long way. Within days, a rumour started that Jay had come back to life. Witnesses had seen him, driven with him. He had died, they said, but now he was alive again. It seemed that his driving had been so absolutely safe, so perfectly matching the requirements of the main judge of the Great High Court, that even a fatal accident couldn't keep him dead. His driving was, well, just completely safe. The officials tried to deny the rumours, but they would not go away. And then, some weeks later, the full, astonishing significance of Jay's safe driving began to become clear. The witnesses who first heard, well, it blew their minds. Then they told everyone else, and the officials couldn't stop the reports spreading like wildfire, try as they might. Amazingly, almost unbelievably, the news was that the main judge had offered to accept the price of Jay's death as payment for all the damage caused by anyone else's mistakes. All the repairs, all the fines, all the compensation claims, in full, however big. It would even cover the blame. So no charge ever brought before the main judge of the Great High Court would ever stick. And so the judge wasn't scary anymore. That's how safe Jay's driving had made things. All you had to do to take up this unrepeatable offer was to believe it and act on the promise that came with it. But that, if anything, was even stranger. The promise was that Jay himself, in his new life state, would take over your driving for you and transform it. If anyone would trust him with their car or lorry or van or bike or whatever, he would help them choose the destination and show them the way and stay with them, especially on bad roads. And he'd also show them how to drive without hurting other road users, because he'd fill them with a kind of inner caring road sense. In short, they'd gradually take on his driving skills for themselves. And one more thing. Those who trusted their driving to Jay were promised that, just as had happened to him, they wouldn't be finished off by any fatal accident. They could look forward to the joys of driving with him forever. It sounds just too ridiculous. But the thing is, those first witnesses who took him at his word and tried it for themselves found it was true. And so has everyone else who's believed and trusted what they said.